Dad, are you ready to leave yet, Dad? Are you leaving yet?
You've never been so excited about getting us out of the house. Is there going to be some kind of mischief going on?
No, Dad. Tony's going to read me another story tonight. He's going to start reading Through the Looking Glass, and I'm going to hear it with Annie and some friends.
What friends?
Well, I thought that I would go and get some friends out of the garage.
Some friends? By friends, do you mean the Minions?
Well, they're very fun, Dad, and they don't like to sleep a lot. And I think that they would love to hear it because they really loved to hear Alice in Wonderland. And this is about her, and they told me that they would like to hear it.
They told you. So you can understand them, can you?
Yes, it's not difficult.
It's not. What do you mean it's not difficult? It's terribly difficult. How do you understand what they're saying?
I don't know. They've taught them to say some words like hello and goodbye, and they love bananas.
Yes, they do seem to love bananas for some odd reason. Well, that's very interesting. I'll have to join you out in the garage when you talk to them one of these days, shall I?
Well, I think you might, Dad. They're sometimes a little bit shy, but I think I could get them to talk. You've set me off the track. When are you leaving? Are you leaving now?
Tony's not here yet.
Where is he?
He's shopping with Elizabeth, and they should be back shortly, and then we'll be leaving.
I want them to get back now.
Well, you've got your wish, darling.
Why do you want us to leave?
I think I know why he wants you to leave, don't I?
I think you know.
Oh, we're going to start a new story this evening, are we?
Yes, we are, and I'm so excited, I'm ever so excited. You know, Through the Looking Glass is one of my all-time favourites. I actually enjoy it better than the previous one, which is not the case always with sequels, but I feel in this one, Carroll has really come into his own. His poetry's...
Yes, all right. Time for us to leave. Shall we go, Elizabeth?
Yes, well, have a lovely time.
Yes, thank you, Tony. Do I need to ask what you've bought?
No, you don't need to ask particularly. All right, let's go and say good night to Annie, and then you may have your story.
Elizabeth!
Yes, what, darling?
Elizabeth, may I bring the Minions in to listen to the story with me?
The Minions? You're going to bring the Minions to listen to the story with you?
Well, Tony, they love the stories.
Well, they may love them, but they're a bit intrusive.
What does obtrusive mean?
Well, they're obstreperous.
What does obstreperous mean?
What Tony means to say, Teddy, is that they are loud and they interrupt him and he doesn't like it.
Oh, well, how about if I tell them to be on their best behavior and be very quiet?
I don't know if that's going to succeed. I don't think they have a best behavior.
Well, I find that they like bananas, so perhaps I could give them some bananas and then they would be eating and so they wouldn't be able to talk through your story. Do you have any bananas, Dad?
Yes, we have some bananas in the kitchen. You can go get them. I think that would be acceptable. I mean, they do seem rather lonely out there.
I think it's perfectly fine. Actually, I realise they like doing small household tasks like, you know, dusting and hoovering and things like that. They're quite good at it. I think they just like to be useful.
Well, do we pay them?
No, I think they actually like it. Like those, you know, those elves, the house elves. I think they enjoy it.
Well, we don't have any elves. I suppose while I'm trying to decipher their language, we could let them have some fun in the house, do a few chores, and...
Yes, that's all very well, Dad, but can you please go?
Well, you're very excited to get rid of us. All right, we'll go say goodbye to Annie, and then we'll go out the back door. So, well, have a lovely time, you two.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I don't know about those Minions, but yes, I'm sure we will. So, let's follow them into Annie's room in just a moment. Would you like some warm milk?
I would like some more milk, and then we need to get some bananas for the minions, and I'll meet you in Annie's room as soon as I go get them, okay?
Yes, all right. Well, I'll get the bananas and the milk, and I'll meet you in Annie's room then.
Okay.
Oh, look at her. She's already asleep. I don't even think she needs a story. I know, but you know Tony loves to read these stories to Timothy, and Timothy loves hearing them, and do you know, I think those minions enjoy it as well. Maybe they understand us better than we understand them. Well, that's possible. I don't know. I mean, they've been exposed to our language. Oh, well, darling, let's go and let them have their fun and read their story and, well,
I don't know. I almost wish I could stay.
Well, maybe we'll have Tony do us a reading from it or something later.
Ooh, that would be lovely.
All right, let's go.
Oh, look at that lovely little thing. Oh, she's already asleep. Oh, well, I don't suppose this is going to wake her. Although those minions are quite loud. Well, we'll see. Ah, here you are, Timothy, and... I mean...
I'm not Timothy, I'm Teddy.
I'm sorry, I was just writing him the other day. I don't know where my brain gets. You know it's over 500 years old.
What?
Well, yes, I'm a vampire. I'm very old.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you're very... Oh, wait a minute. Where are the bananas? They're running about. I don't want them to get in the crib. I think they'll upset it.
Oh, that's quite all right. All right, let me get... All right. Here we are. Bananas!
Banana, banana, banana,
Alright, you're going to wake up the baby. Can you be quiet, please?
Yes, be quiet. I told you could only come and listen to a story if you were quiet. Kevin, you heard me, didn't you? Yes. Well, alright then, you must be quiet and eat your bananas. Banana. Oh, we don't need the story again. I mean the song. But we don't need it again. All right. Are we ready? Are we ready, Tony? Do you have the book?
Yes, I have the book right here. Now, I'd just like to let you know that this particular book begins with a poem.
A poem? Is it a good poem?
Well, I think it's a lovely poem.
Can we skip the poem?
I don't want to skip the poem. Besides which, well, it helps set the tone.
What?
The tone, you know, the setting. It helps
set the setting.
I'm going to read the poem now.
All right.
Okay, so here we go. Child of the pure, unclouded brow and dreaming eyes of wonder, though time be fleet and I and thou are half a life asunder, thy loving smile will surely hail the love gift of a fairy tale. I have not seen thy sunny face nor heard thy silver laughter. No thought of me shall find a place in thy young life's hereafter. Even that now thou wilt not fail to listen to my fairy tale. A tale began in other days when summer suns were glowing, a simple chime that served to time the rhythm of our rowing, whose echoes live in memory yet, though envious years would say, forget. Come, hearken then, ere voice of dread, with bitter tidings laden, shall summon to unwelcome bed a melancholy maiden. We are but older children, dear, who fret to find our bedtime near. Without the frost, the blinding snow, the storm wind's moody madness, within the firelight's ruddy glow, and childhood's nest of gladness, the magic words shall hold thee fast. Thou shalt not heed the raving blast. And though the shadow of a sigh may tremble through the story, for happy summer days gone by and vanished summer glory, it shall not touch with breath of bale the pleasance of our fairy tale.
That was lovely, Tony. I like that poem. Clap, everyone. No, we're not singing the banana song. Just keep eating. I'm sorry, Tony. All right, what's next? Is the story next?
Yes, the story is next. So, here we go. Chapter 1 of Through the Looking Glass and What Alice Found There. This chapter is called The Looking Glass House. One thing was certain, that the white kitten had had nothing to do with it. It was the black kitten's fault entirely, for the white kitten had been having its face washed by the old cat for the last quarter of an hour, and bearing it pretty well, considering. So you see that it couldn't have had any hand in the mischief. The way Dinah washed her children's faces was this. First, she held the poor thing down by its ear with one paw, and then, with the other paw, she rubbed its face all over, the wrong way, beginning at the nose, and just now, as I said, she was hard at work on the white kitten, which was lying quite still and trying to purr, no doubt feeling that it was all meant for its own good. But the black kitten had been finished with earlier in the afternoon, and so, while Alice was sitting curled up in a corner of the great armchair, half talking to herself and half asleep, the kitten had been having a grand time of romps with the ball of worsted Alice had been trying to wind up, and had been rolling it up and down till it had come all undone again. And there it was, spread over the hearth rug, all knots and tangles, with the kitten running after its own tail in the middle. "Oh, you wicked, wicked little thing!" cried Alice, catching up the kitten, and giving it a little kiss to make it understand that it was in disgrace. "Really, Dinah ought to have taught you better manners. You ought, Dinah, you know you ought!" she added, looking reproachfully at the old cat, and speaking in as cross a voice as she could manage. And then she scrambled back into the armchair, taking the kitten and the worsted with her, and began winding them all up again. But she didn't get on very fast, as she was talking all the time, sometimes to the kitten, and sometimes to herself. Kitty sat very demurely on her knee, pretending to watch the progress of the winding, and now and then putting out one paw and gently touching the ball, as if it would be glad to help if it might. "Do you know what tomorrow is, Kitty?" Alice began. "You'd have guessed if you'd been up in the window with me, only Dinah was making you tidy, so you couldn't. I was watching the boys getting in sticks for the bonfire, and it wants plenty of sticks, Kitty, only it got so cold and it snowed so, they had to leave off. Never mind, we'll go and see the bonfire tomorrow." Here Alice wound two or three turns of the worsted round the kitten's neck, just to see how it would look. This led to a scramble, in which the ball rolled down upon the floor, and yards of it got unwound again. "Do you know, I was so angry, Kitty," Alice went on, as soon as they were comfortably settled again, "when I saw all the mischief you had been doing. I was very nearly opening the window and putting you out into the snow, and you'd have deserved it, you little mischievous darling. What have you got to say for yourself? Now don't interrupt me," she went on, holding up one finger. "I am going to tell you all of your faults. Number one, you squeaked twice while Dinah was watching your face this morning. Now you can't deny it, Kitty. I heard you. What's that you say?" Pretending that the kitten was speaking. "Her paw went into your eye? Well, that's your fault for keeping your eyes open. If you'd shut them up tight, it wouldn't have happened. Now don't make any more excuses, but listen. Number two, you pulled Snowdrop away by the tail just as I had put down the saucer of milk before her. What? You were thirsty, were you? How do you know if she wasn't thirsty too? Now for number three, you unwound every bit of the worsted while I wasn't looking. That's three faults, Kitty, and you've not been punished for any of them yet. You know I'm saving up all of your punishments for Wednesday week. Suppose they saved up all my punishments," she went on, talking more to herself than to the kitten. "What would they do at the end of the year? I would be sent to prison, I suppose, when the day came. Or, let me see, suppose each punishment was to be going without a dinner. Then when the miserable day came, I should have to go without 50 dinners at once. Well, I shouldn't mind that much. I'd far rather go without them than eat them. Do you hear the snow against the window panes, Kitty? How nice and soft it sounds. Just as if someone was kissing the window all over the outside. I wonder if the snow loves the trees and fields, that it kisses them so gently. What? Who did that?
It wasn't me.
Who made that horrid noise in the middle of my lovely speech about kissing?
Well, Tony, I must say kissing isn't really my favourite subject.
But you didn't do it?
No.
Who did it? One of you did it. I know. I think it was that mischievous Kevin. Don't you hello me. I know you're the one that made that horrid raspberry sound at me. Now, I won't have any more of that, or you'll go back into the garage again. Do you hear me?
Help!
Yes, all right. Thank you. Now, I will continue. And then it covers them up snugly, you know, with a white quilt. And perhaps it says, "Go to sleep, darlings, till the summer comes again." And when they wake up in the summer, Kitty, they dress themselves all in green and dance about whenever the wind blows. Oh, that's very pretty, cried Alice, dropping the ball of worsted to clap her hands. And I do so wish it were true. I'm sure the woods look sleepy in the autumn when the leaves are getting brown. Kitty, can you play chess? Now don't smile, my dear, I'm asking it seriously. Because when we were playing just now, you watched just as if you understood it, and when I said check, you purred. Well, it was a nice check, Kitty. I really might have won if it hadn't been for that nasty knight that came wriggling down among my pieces. Kitty, dear, let's pretend... And here, I wish I could tell you half the things Alice used to say, beginning with her favourite phrase, "Let's pretend." She had had quite a long argument with her sister only the day before, all because Alice had begun with, "Let's pretend we're kings and queens," and her sister, who liked being very exact, had argued that they couldn't because there were only two of them, and Alice had been reduced at last to say, "Well, you can be one of them then, and I'll be all the rest." And once she had really frightened her old nurse by shouting suddenly in her ear, "Nurse, do let's pretend that I'm a hungry hyena, and you're a bone."
I think Lucretia would be very frightened if I said anything like that to her.
Do you think so? Do you think she would think you were going to eat her right up?
I think so. Oh, I'm sorry, Tony, I interrupted you.
That's quite all right. I don't mind laughing interruptions. I just mind raspberry interruptions. I'm looking at you, Kevin.
Hello!
Yes, all right, that's enough of that. Okay, so here we go. But this is taking us away from Alice's speech to the kitten.
Let's pretend that you're the Red Queen, Kitty. Do you know, I think if you sat up and folded your arms, you'd look exactly like her. Now do try, there's a dear.
And Alice got the Red Queen off the table and set it up before the kitten as a model for it to imitate. However, the thing didn't succeed, principally, Alice said, because the kitten wouldn't fold its arms properly. So, to punish it, she held it up to the looking glass, that it might see how sulky it was.
And if you're not good directly, she added, I'll put you through into Looking Glass House. How would you like that?
Now, if you'll only attend, Kitty, and not talk so much, I'll tell you all of my ideas about Looking Glass House. First, there's the room you can see through the glass. That's just the same as our drawing room, only the things go the other way. I can see all of it when I get up upon a chair. All but the bit just behind the fireplace. Oh, I do so wish I could see that bit. I want so much to know whether they've a fire in the winter. You never can tell, you know, unless our fire smokes. And then the smoke comes up in that room too. But that may only be a pretense, just to make it look as if they had a fire. Well, then the books are something like our books, only the words go the wrong way. I know that because I've held up one of our books to the glass, and then they hold one up in the other room. How would you like to live in Looking Glass House, Kitty? I wonder if they'd give you milk to drink there. Perhaps Looking Glass milk isn't good to drink, but oh, Kitty, oh, we come into the passage. You can just see a little peep of the passage in Looking Glass House if you leave the door of our drawing room wide open. And it's very like our passage as far as you can see, only you know it may be quite different on beyond. Oh, Kitty, how nice it would be if we could only get through into Looking Glass House. I'm sure it's got, oh, such beautiful things in it. Let's pretend there's a way of getting through into it somehow, Kitty. Let's pretend the glass has got all soft like gauze, so that we can get through. Why, it's turning into a sort of mist now, I declare. It'll be easy enough to get through. She was up on the chimney piece while she said this, though she hardly knew how she had got there. And certainly the glass was beginning to melt away, just like a bright, silvery mist. In another moment, Alice was through the glass and had jumped lightly down into the Looking Glass room. The very first thing she did was to look whether there was a fire in the fireplace, and she was quite pleased to find that there was a real one, blazing away as brightly as the one she had left behind. "So I shall be as warm here as I was in the old room," thought Alice. "Warmer, in fact, because there'll be no one here to scold me away from the fire. Oh, what fun it will be when they see me through the glass in here and can't get at me!" Then she began looking about, and noticed that what could be seen from the old room was quite common and uninteresting, but that all the rest was as different as possible. For instance, the pictures on the wall next to the fire seemed to be all alive, and the very clock on the chimney-piece, you know, you can only see the back of it in the looking-glass, had got the face of a little old man, and grinned at her.
"Tony!"
"What, darling?"
"Do you know, I think that she has gone out of the muggle world into the magical world."
"And why do you think that, my dear?"
"Well, because the pictures are moving."
"That's right."
And the little clock is smiling at her just like the clock in my bedroom. Do you think there will be a mirror that talks?"
"I don't know. Perhaps there will be a wonderful mirror that talks, an enchanted mirror. But it really does sound as though she's left the muggle world entirely, hasn't she?"
"I think so. I really like this story, Tony. I can see why it's your favourite."
"Why, thank you. All right, here we go. Well, let's find out what else she can see. They don't keep this room so tidy as the other," Alice thought to herself, as she noticed several of the chessmen down in the hearth among the cinders. But in another moment, with a little "Oh!" of surprise, she was down on her hands and knees watching them. The chessmen were walking about, two and two.
"Oh, just like they do when we play chess."
"That's correct. Here are the Red King and the Red Queen," Alice said in a whisper for fear of frightening them. "And there are the White King and the White Queen sitting on the edge of the shovel. And here are two rooks walking arm in arm. I don't think they can hear me," she went on as she put her head closer down. "And I'm nearly sure they can't see me. I feel somehow as if I was getting invisible." Here, something began squeaking on the table behind Alice, and made her turn her head just in time to see one of the white pawns roll over and begin kicking. She watched it with great curiosity to see what would happen next. "It is the voice of my child!" the White Queen cried out as she rushed past the king, so violently that she knocked him over among the cinders. "My precious Lily! My imperial kitten!" And she began scrambling wildly up the side of the fender.
"Tony!"
"What?"
You sound like Lady Fanshawe, Timothy's grandmother. She sounds like the White Queen."
Well, I suppose I was kind of thinking of her when I did that."
"Oh, it's brilliant."
"Well, thank you." "Well, let's see if I can imitate Sir Richard for her, her husband."
"Oh, please do."
"All right, let's see. Imperial fiddlestick," said the king, rubbing his nose, which had been hurt by the fall. He had a right to be a little annoyed with the queen, for he was covered with ashes from head to foot.
Alice was very anxious to be of use, and as the poor little Lily was nearly screaming herself into a fit, she hastily picked up the Queen and set her on the table by the side of her noisy little daughter. The Queen gasped and sat down. The rapid journey through the air had quite taken away her breath, and for a moment or two she could do nothing but hug the little Lily in silence. As soon as she had recovered her breath a little, she called out to the White King, who was sitting sulkily among the ashes. "Mind the volcano!" "What volcano?" said the King, looking up anxiously into the fire, as if he thought that was the most likely place to find one. "Blew me up!" panted the Queen, who was still a little out of breath. "Why'd you come up the regular way? Don't get blown up!" Alice watched the White King as he slowly struggled up from bar to bar, till at last she said, "Why, you'll be hours and hours getting up to the table at that rate. I'd far better help you, hadn't I?" But the King took no notice of the question. It was quite clear that he could neither hear nor see her. So Alice picked him up very gently and lifted him across more slowly than she lifted the Queen, that she mightn't take his breath away. But before she put him on the table, she thought she might as well dust him a little. He was so covered with ashes. She said afterwards that she had never seen in all her life such a face as the King made when he found himself held in the air by an invisible hand and being dusted. He was far too astonished to cry out, but his eyes and his mouth went on getting larger and larger and rounder, till her hand shook so with laughing that she nearly let him drop upon the floor. "Oh, please don't make such faces, my dear!" she cried out, quite forgetting that the King couldn't hear her. "You make me laugh so that I can hardly hold you. And don't keep your mouth so wide open, or the ashes will get into it. There, now I think you're tidy enough," she added, and smoothed his hair and set him upon the table near the Queen. The King immediately fell flat on his back and lay perfectly still, and Alice was a little alarmed at what she had done and went round the room to see if she could find any water to throw over him. However, she could find nothing but a bottle of ink, and when she got back with it, she found he'd recovered. And he and the Queen were talking together in a frightened whisper, so low that Alice could hardly hear what they said. The King was saying, "I assure you, my dear, I turned cold to the very ends of my whiskers." To which the Queen replied, "You haven't got any whiskers." "The horror of that moment," the King went on, "I shall never, never forget." "You will, though," the Queen said, "if you don't make a memorandum of it." Alice looked on with great interest as the King took an enormous memorandum book out of his pocket and began writing. A sudden thought struck her, and she took hold of the end of the pencil, which came some way over his shoulder, and began writing for him. The poor King looked puzzled and unhappy, and struggled with the pencil for some time without saying anything. But Alice was too strong for him, and at last he panted out, "My dear, I really must get a thinner pencil. I can't manage this one a bit. It writes all manner of things I don't intend." "What manner of things?" said the Queen, looking over the book, in which Alice had put, "The White Knight is sliding down the poker. He balances very badly." "That's not a memorandum of your feelings." There was a book lying near Alice on the table, and while she sat watching the White King, for she was still a little anxious about him, and had the ink all ready to throw over him in case he fainted again, she turned over the leaves to find some part that she could read, for it's all in some sort of language I don't know. She said to herself, "It was like this. Now, I shall have to show you the book now, Teddy, because I can't really read this, but can you see? You can sort of read the letters, but not really."
Oh, Tony, Terry, I know I could read them."
"How do you think you could read them?"
"I think that if we put the book up to the looking glass, that we could read those words."
"I think you might be right. Shall we see?" She puzzled over this for a long time, but at last a bright thought struck her. "Why, it's a looking-glass book, of course, and if I held it up to a glass, the words will all go the right way again. You're such a smart little thing." This was the poem that Alice read. Jabberwocky. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand. Long time the manxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree, and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock, with eyes of flame, came whiffling through the tugly wood, and burbled as it came. One, two, and through the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. Oh, frabjous day, Calloo, Callay! He chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig, and the
slithy toves.
Excuse me, did he just say slithy toves?
Kevin, did you say slithy toves? Slithy toves.
Well, my goodness, I do believe he knew those words. Let's see if he'll say other words. 'Twas brillig and the
slithy toves.
Did gyre and
gibber
in the
wabe.
Oh,
mimsy at the bog grove and the miss of gabe.
Well, that was interesting.
I do believe they know some of those words. Well, that's very interesting. We'll have to tell Dad when he gets back.
Yes, we should definitely tell your father. They seem to enjoy that song. Look at them dancing about.
I don't think they want to sing out loud because you told them to be quiet, but they do appear to really enjoy it. I think maybe it's a song where they come from.
Well, I don't know. That's quite interesting. Well, it's an interesting poem.
Tony, there were a lot of words in that poem that I don't understand.
Well, I think they're meant to be nonsense words, but I don't think they are. This is very interesting. Well, I guess we should continue with the story, though.
Yes, please.
All right. It seems very pretty, she said when she'd finished it, but it's rather hard to understand. You see, she didn't like to confess, even to herself, that she couldn't make it out at all.
Sometimes it seems to fill my head with ideas, only I don't exactly know what they are. However, somebody killed something. Well, that's clear at any rate.
But oh, thought Alice, suddenly jumping up,
if I don't make haste, I shall have to go back through the looking glass before I've seen what the rest of the house is like. Let's have a look at the garden first.
She was out of the room in a moment and ran downstairs, or at least it wasn't exactly running, but a new invention for getting downstairs quickly and easily, as Alice said to herself. She just kept the tips of her fingers on the handrail and floated gently down without even touching the stairs with her feet. Then she floated on through the hall and would have gone straight out the door in the same way if she hadn't caught hold of the doorpost. She was getting rather a little giddy with so much floating in the air and was rather glad to find herself walking again in the natural way. And that is the end of chapter 1.
Oh, that's not a long enough chapter.
Well, I'm sorry, you'll have to be content with that for tonight, because I think the minions are getting rather overexcited, and I think they need to go to bed. I think they're going to start singing that banana song again.
All right, well, I'm going to rush them off to bed. Come along, minions, come along. So say goodbye to Tony. Goodbye. Goodbye.
But yes, yes, that's lovely. All right, let's go. Come on, everyone.
Banana! No, no more bananas tonight. Good night, Tony. I'll usher them out to the garage and then I'll go to bed.
Are you sure you can do it on your own?
Well, yes, I have to feed them. And when I come back in, then I'll say good night. All right?
Well, all right, then. I'll see you in just a moment. I'll be getting your bed ready.
Okay, Tony, I'll be back shortly.
All right, I'm going to go check on Annie and let's make sure she's all right. And we'll read another part of the story as soon as we can, okay?
All right, Tony. Good night.
Yes, darling. Good night. A few days later.
Lucretia and Solange have come over to have dinner and visit the baby, and Tony has come over as well. So we're going to start after dinner. Oh my goodness, that was lovely, lovely food. It was so delightful. I can hardly move. I feel that I'm stuffed up to the top of my head. Oh, it was delightful.
Tony?
Yes, darling.
You didn't really eat anything.
Oh, no, no, I never eat, as you know. I can only have certain things, but just watching you people eat was just a joyous experience. Lucretia seems to get such great joy out of eating.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, you just love your food. I just think it's lovely.
Well, you know, I get excited about my food sometimes. I like some.
Well, yes, and I used to love my food. You know, when I was alive...
Yes, darling Tony, but you know, I think we'd like to do something with you after dinner tonight, if you're game.
Game? Playing a game? Well, no, no, it's not really a game, Tony, but we know you've been reading Alice in Wonderland books to Teddy. Yes, I have. And we so enjoyed performing with you that we were wondering if we might be able to do a chapter this evening.
Really? You'd perform for me again and with me, and oh, I would just love that. All right, okay, so what chapter are you on?
I'm getting ready to start chapter 2, which is The Garden of Live Flowers.
Oh, that's one of my favourites. Can I be the tiger lily?
Yes, I think that would be lovely. And, well, Elizabeth, I guess, would you like to be Alice?
Yes, I'll be Alice. And I guess I'll be the rose as well, because someone needs to be the rose, yes?
Well, yes, but then, oh, we must have a red queen. Are you up to it, Lucretia?
Oh, a red queen? Mm-hmm, I likes the red queen. You know, I used to read this whole story to them myself, but, you know, I think I just let you read it, Mr. Tony, because you're so expressive. But, you know, I would like to be the red queen. That would be nice. Well, all right, let's just go in and surprise Teddy. I think he's playing with his blocks or something. Should we go? Hello, everyone. What's going on? Am I in trouble?
No, Teddy darling, but guess what we're going to do for you?
What?
We're going to put on a show of the second chapter of Alice. Are you excited?
Oh my goodness, really? Can I get the minions too?
Are the minions asleep yet?
No, but I will go get them very quickly. Lucretia, will you come with me? Because you can put lots of them in your apron.
I don't know about them minion things. They're a little freaky.
No, they're not. They won't hurt you, Lucretia. They'll just ride in your apron. They're very cheerful, really.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll be back in a minute.
All right, let's go set the stage, shall we? Where should we do it?
Oh, I think we should do it in the sitting room. It's the best place, really. In front of the fire?
Yes, yes, that's perfect. So a few minutes go by, and then we hear a chorus of...
Ha! Yes, yes. All right, Lucretia, you may let them out. They like to run around a bit.
Well, don't let them run around too much. They were chasing the cats the other night, and I don't think that's very nice.
They're not going to hurt them, Elizabeth. They just are curious, I believe.
Well, one was riding the red one, and I don't think that's very nice at all.
Well, that red one's awfully mean.
Well, whatever. Anyway, just see that they don't get on the cats, all right?
Oh, you heard her. No getting on the cats. Banana? No, we're not having bananas right now. We're listening to a story. Oh, yes, thank you, Kevin. Oh, my goodness. It gets rather tiresome. I think he likes the word hello. Did they hoover for you today, Elizabeth?
Yes, they did a lovely job, and they dusted the piano as well, and it looks lovely. I think they waxed it.
Very nice. Thank you so much, Kevin. Banana?
Well, maybe later we'll have a banana, all right?
Hello!
Yes. That just cracks me up. All right. Are we ready then, Tony? Yes, we're ready. And this is chapter 2, and it's called The Garden of Live Flowers, and we're going to start out with Alice.
I should see the garden far better, said Alice to herself, if I could get to the top of that hill. And here's a path that leads straight to it. At least, no, it doesn't do that.
After going a few yards along the path and turning several sharp corners,
Well, but I suppose it will at last. But how curiously it twists. It's more like a corkscrew than a path. Well, this turn goes to the hill, I suppose. Well, no, it doesn't. This goes straight back to the house. Well, then I'll try it the other way.
And so she did, wandering up and down and trying to turn after turn, but always coming back to the house, do what she would. Indeed, once when she turned a corner rather more quickly than usual, she ran against it before she could stop herself.
It's no use talking about it,
Alice said, looking up at the house and pretending it was arguing with her.
I'm not going in again yet. I know I should have to get through the looking glass again, back into the old room, and there'd be an end of all my adventures.
So, resolutely turning her back upon the house, she set out once more down the path, determined to keep straight on till she got to the hill. For a few minutes all went well, and she was just saying,
I really shall do it this time,
when the path gave a sudden twist and shook itself, as she described it afterwards, and the next moment she found herself actually walking in at the door.
Oh, that's too bad,
she cried.
I never saw such a house for getting in the way. Never!
However, there was the hill in full sight, so there was nothing to be done but to start again. This time she came upon a large flower bed with a border of daisies and a willow tree growing in the middle.
Oh, Tiger Lily,
said Alice, addressing herself to one that was waving gracefully about in the wind.
I wish you could talk.
We can talk,
said the Tiger Lily,
when there's anybody worth talking to.
Alice was so astonished that she couldn't speak for a moment. It quite seemed to take her breath away. At length, as the Tiger Lily only went on waving about, she spoke again, in a timid voice, almost in a whisper.
And can all the flowers talk?
As well as you can,
said the Tiger Lily,
and a great deal louder.
It isn't manners for us to begin, you know, said the rose, and I really was wondering when you'd speak. Said I to myself, her face has got some sense in it, though it's not a clever one. Still, you're the right colour, and that goes a long way.
I don't care about the colour,
the Tiger Lily remarked.
If only her petals curled up a little more, she'd be all right.
Alice didn't like being criticised, so she began asking questions.
Aren't you sometimes frightened at being planted out here, with nobody to take care of you?
There's a tree in the middle, said the rose.
What else is it good for?
But what could it do if any danger came?
Alice asked.
It could bark, said the rose.
Oh, my goodness, we've no one for the daisy.
Daisy. Well,
I'll do the daisy. All right.
It says bow wow, cried a daisy. That's why its branches are called boughs.
That is so silly. It says bow wow. Oh, sorry.
Yes, that was quite a funny joke, I agree.
Didn't you know that? Cried another daisy.
And here they all began shouting together, till the air seemed quite full of little shrill voices.
Silence, every one of you,
cried the Tiger Lily, waving itself passionately from side to side and trembling with excitement.
They know I can't get at them,
it panted, bending its quivering head towards Alice,
or they wouldn't dare to do it.
Never mind,
Alice said in a soothing tone, and stooping down to the daisies, who were just beginning again, she whispered,
If you don't hold your tongues, I'll pick you.
There was silence in a moment, and several of the pink daisies turned white.
That's right, said the Tiger Lily. The daisies are the worst of all. When one speaks, they all begin together, and it's enough to make one wither to hear the way they go on.
How is it you can all talk so nicely?
Alice said, hoping to get into a better temper by a compliment.
I've been in many gardens before, but none of the flowers could talk.
Put your hand down and feel the ground,
said the Tiger Lily.
Then you'll know why.
Alice did so.
It's very hard, she said, but I don't see what that has to do with it.
In most gardens, the Tiger Lily said, they make the beds too soft, so that the flowers are always asleep.
This sounded a very good reason, and Alice was quite pleased to know it.
I never thought of that before, she said.
It's my opinion that you never think at all, the rose said in a rather severe tone.
I never saw anybody that looked stupider,
a violet said so suddenly that Alice quite jumped, for it hadn't spoken before.
"Hold your tongue," cried the tiger lily. "As if you ever saw anybody. You keep your head under the leaves and snore away there till you know no more what's going on in the world than if you were a bud."
"Are there any more people in the garden besides me?" Alice said, not choosing to notice the rose's last remark.
"There's one other flower in the garden that can move about like you," said the rose. "I wonder how you do it."
"You're always wondering," said the tiger lily.
"But she's more bushy than you are."
"Is she like me?"
Alice asked eagerly, for the thought crossed her mind.
"There's another little girl in the garden somewhere."
"Well, she has the same awkward shape as you," the rose said.
"But she's redder, and her petals are shorter, I think. They're done up close, like a dahlia,"
said the tiger lily,
"not tumbled about like yours."
"But that's not your fault, you know," the rose added kindly.
"You're beginning to fade, you know, and then one can't help one's petals getting a little untidy."
Alice didn't like this idea at all, so to change the subject, she asked,
"Does she ever come out here?"
"I dare say you'll see her soon," said the rose.
"She's one of the kind that has 9 spikes, you know."
"Where does she wear them?"
Alice asked with some curiosity.
"Why, all round her head, of course," the rose replied. "I was wondering you hadn't got some too. I thought it was a regular rule."
"She's coming,"
cried the larkspur.
"I hear a footstep, thump, thump, along the gravel walk."
Alice looked round eagerly and found that it was the Red Queen.
"She's grown a good deal," was her first remark.
She had indeed. When Alice first found her in the ashes, she'd been only 3 inches high, and here she was, half a head taller than Alice herself.
"It's the fresh air that does it," said the rose. "Wonderfully fine air it is out here."
"I think I'll go meet her," said Alice,
for though the flowers were interesting enough, she felt that it would be far grander to have a talk with a real queen.
"You can't possibly do that," said the rose. "I should advise you to walk the other way."
Well, this sounded nonsense to Alice, so she said nothing but set off at once towards the Red Queen. To her surprise, she lost sight of her in a moment and found herself walking in at the front door again. A little provoked, she drew back, and after looking everywhere for the Queen, whom she spied out at last a long way off, she thought she would try the plan this time of walking in the opposite direction. It succeeded beautifully. She had not been walking a minute before she found herself face to face with the Red Queen and full in sight of the hill she'd been so long aiming at.
"Where do you come from?" said the Red Queen. "And where are you going? Look up, speak nicely, and don't twiddle your fingers all the time."
Alice attended to all these directions and explained, as well as she could, that she had lost her way.
"I don't know what you mean by your way," said the Queen. "All the ways out here belong to me. But why do you come out here at all?"
she added in a kinder tone.
"Curtsy while you're thinking what to say. It saves time."
Alice wondered a little at this, but she was too much in awe of the Queen to disbelieve it.
"I'll try it when I go home," she thought to herself, "the next time I'm a little late for dinner."
"It's time for you to answer me now," the Queen said, looking at her watch. "Open your mouth a little wider when you speak, and always say, 'Your Majesty.'"
"I only wanted to see what the garden was like, Your Majesty."
"That's right," said the Queen, patting her on the head, which Alice didn't like at all. "Though when you say garden, I've seen gardens compared with which this would be a wilderness."
Alice didn't dare to argue the point, but went on,
And I thought I'd try to find my way to the top of that hill."
"When you say hill," the Queen interrupted, "I could show you hills in comparison with which you call that a valley."
"Well, no, I shouldn't," said Alice, contradicting herself at last. "A hill can't be a valley, you know. That would be nonsense."
The Red Queen shook her head.
"You may call it nonsense if you like," she said. "But I've heard nonsense compared with which that would be as sensible as a dictionary."
Alice curtsied again. She was afraid from the Queen's tone that she was a little offended. And they walked on in silence till they got to the top of the little hill.
For some minutes Alice stood without speaking, looking out in all directions over the country, and a most curious country it was. There were a number of little tiny brooks running straight across it from side to side, and the ground between was divided up into squares by a number of little green hedges that reached from brook to brook.
"I declare it's marked out just like a large chessboard,"
Alice said at last. "There ought to be some men moving about somewhere, and so there are," she added in a tone of delight, and her heart began to beat quickly with excitement as she went on. "It's a great, huge game of chess that's being played all over the world, if this is the world at all, you know. Oh, what fun it is! How I wish I was one of them! I wouldn't mind being a pawn, if only I might join, though of course I should like to be a queen best." She glanced rather shyly at the Red Queen as she said this, but her companion only smiled pleasantly and said, "That's easily managed. You could be the White Queen's pawn, if you like, as Lily's too young to play, and you are in the second square to begin with. When you get to the eighth square, you'll be a queen." Just at this moment, somehow or other, they began to run. Alice never could make out, in thinking it over afterwards, how it was that they began. All she remembers is that they were running hand in hand, and the queen went so fast that it was all she could do to keep up with her. And still the queen kept crying, "Faster! Faster!" But Alice felt she could not go faster, though she had no breath left to say so. The most curious part of the thing was that the trees and all the other things round them never changed their places at all. However fast they went, they never seemed to pass anything. "I wonder if the things move along with us," thought poor puzzled Alice, and the queen seemed to guess her thoughts, for she cried, "Faster! Don't try to talk!" Not that Alice had any idea of doing that. She felt as if she would never be able to talk again. She was getting so much out of breath. And the queen still cried, "Faster! Faster!" and dragged her along. "Are we nearly there?" Alice managed to pass out. Sorry. Alice managed to pant out at last. "Nearly there!" the queen repeated. "Why, we passed it 10 minutes ago! Faster!" And they ran for a long time in silence, with the wind whistling in Alice's ears, and almost blowing her hair off her head, she fancied. "Now, now!" cried the queen. "Faster, faster!" They went so fast that at last they seemed to skim through the air, hardly touching the ground with their feet, till suddenly, just as Alice was getting quite exhausted, they stopped, and she found herself sitting on the ground, breathless and giddy. The queen propped her up against a tree and said kindly, "You may rest a little now." Alice looked round her in great surprise. "Why, I do believe we've been under this tree the whole time. Everything's just as it was."
"Of course it is," said the queen. "What would you have it?"
"Well, in our country," said Alice, panting a little, "you'd generally get somewhere else if you ran very fast for a long time, as we've been doing."
"Slow sort of country," said the queen. "Now here, you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere else, you must run at least twice as fast as that."
"I'd rather not try, please," said Alice. "I'm quite content to stay here. I mean, I'm so hot and thirsty."
"I know what you'd like," said the queen good-naturedly, taking a little box out of her pocket. "Have a biscuit?"
Alice thought it would not be civil to say no, though it wasn't at all what she wanted. She took it and ate it as well as she could, and was very dry, and she thought she had never been so nearly choked in all her life.
"Why, you're refreshing yourself," said the queen. "I just take the measurements."
And she took a ribbon out of her pocket, marked in inches, and began measuring the ground and sticking little pegs in here and there.
"At the end of 2 yards," she said, putting in a peg to mark the distance, "I should give you directions. Have another biscuit?"
"No, thank you," said Alice. "One's quite enough."
"Thirst quenched, I hope," said the queen.
Alice did not know what to say to this, but luckily the queen did not wait for an answer and went on.
"At the end of 3 yards, I shall repeat them for fear of your forgetting them. At the end of 4, I shall say goodbye. And at the end of 5, I shall go."
She got all the pegs put in by this time, and Alice looked on with great interest as she returned to the tree, and then began slowly walking down the row. At the 2-yard peg, she faced round and said,
"A pawn goes 2 squares in the first move, you know, so you go very quickly through the 3rd square, by railway, I should think, and you'll find yourself in the 4th square in no time. Well, that square belonged to Tweedledum and Tweedledee. The 5th is mostly water, and the 6th belonged to Humpty Dumpty. But you make no remark?"
I didn't know I had to make one just then," Alice faltered out.
"You should have said," the queen went on in a tone of grave reproof. "It is extremely kind of you to tell me all this. However, we suppose you said it. The seven squares are for us. However, one of the knights will show you the way. And in the eighth square, we shall be queens together. And it's all feasting and fun. Alice got up and curtsied and sat down again. At the next peg, the queen turned again, and this time she said, "Speak in French when you can't think of the English for a thing. Turn out your toes as you walk, and remember who you are." She did not wait for Alice to curtsy this time, but walked on quickly to the next peg, where she turned for a moment to say, "Goodbye," and then hurried on to the last. How it happened, Alice never knew, but exactly as she came to the last peg, she was gone. Whether she vanished into the air, or whether she ran quickly into the wood. And she can run very fast, thought Alice. There was no way of guessing. But she was gone, and Alice began to remember that she was a pawn, and that it would soon be time for her to move. That ends chapter 2. And thank you for all my wonderful helpers for this chapter. Would everyone like to give them a hand?
I'm going to clap, because it was wonderful. Yay! The minions are clapping too, but their hands are very soft, so you can't hear it. You can see them clapping, right? Oh, they're dancing about now. I like it when they dance about. That means they really liked it. Oh, they want to sing a song to you, Tony.
I can only imagine. All right, what song would they like to sing?
I don't really know. It's a song in their language, but they said that they really would like that story and they were wanting to sing you a song. So can they sing you a song?
Yes, of course they may. All right, I'm ready.
Did you like it?
Well, it was the Jabberwocky song. That's lovely.
All right, minions, let's go to bed now. Thank you, everyone.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, love.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Teddy. I love you. Good night.
You're welcome, darling. I'll see you in the morning. Good night, everyone.